Okay. Am I allowed to say that it's batshit? Because, I mean,
Yes,
it
you
is.
can.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I said damn and shit in a couple other episodes. So there
Okay.
you
Well,
go.
I think it is. It's a rather batshit song. It doesn't quite
Oh,
sound like anything
definitely.
else. Yeah, it doesn't sound quite like anything else in her discography. I've said before, I mean, someone once asked me what my favorite Kate video was, and I don't think my answer was 100% sincere, but I said it was from the Christmas special, the violin performance, which she's getting attacked by the anthropomorphic violins. It's always so blunt and on the nose, but you gotta love it, because she just so fully commit to these, absolutely taking these ridiculous concepts 100% seriously.
Welcome to Strange Phenomena, the music of Kate Bush. I am Cecily Link, and this week we are going to be talking about the seventh track from Kate's third album, Never Forever, called Violin. We actually have two people that we're going to hear from for this episode. The first fan that we're going to get to hear from was in the cold open that you guys heard there, and that was from Christopher Kelly. The second fan that we'll get to hear from at the very end with adding his thoughts on this song is Wayne Henderson, who you'll remember from the last season episode about In Search of Peter Pan. He was one of the three fans that I spoke with for that episode. But the first fan we're going to get to talk with here is Christopher Kelly. I encountered this guy on Twitter. I can't exactly remember now how I came across him, but I noticed in his Twitter biography that he not only was a Kate fan, but that he actually has a Kate Bush blog. And so, of course, I went and followed him, and then we started chatting about Kate Bush, and Christopher told me that he wanted to talk about Violin in particular. So we're going to get to hear from him first, and then at the end of the episode, we'll get to hear what Wayne has to say about Violin. But first things first, here's my discussion with Christopher Kelly.
Hello, my name is Chris Kelly. I write a blog called Dream of Organon, which is another project that covers every single song of Kate Bush, but in prose, and in as roughly as I can get it in order of recording rather than release.
Which is more what I'm doing.
Yes. Yeah, it's basically just an attempt to synthesize, just every kind of criticism that exists about Kate, musical, artistic, sociopolitical. But yeah, just trying to write the definitive Kate Bush blog. I mean, it's the only blog of its kind, I believe. But yeah.
Now, where can people find this blog if they're curious? Where is all this in written form?
It is at WordPress, katebushsongs.wordpress.com. That should be easy to find. Yeah, just today, as a recording, the next entry that's going to go up is Saxophone Song.
Oh, yep. Yes. I remember when I did that episode.
You're way ahead of me.
Now, what kind of inspired you to try and go through Kate's songs for a blog?
Well, I think I was bored. That
I guess you say that about me and my idea too.
I needed some kind of a project going on, and I've been reading Chris O'Leary's David Bowie blog, Pushing Head of the Dame, and so I decided that I could do something similar, and Kate Bush was the artist I probably knew most about aside from Bowie, so I thought, okay, just I'll try to do Kate, and so I set up the site and said, okay, I'm going to start doing it this weekend, announced it, linked it on social media, then I realized that I did not have the resources, so I delayed actually beginning to write the blog by nearly a year. But now it's finally out. I'm about 5 entries in. I don't know how many it'll be by the time this podcast is uploaded, but yeah, it's going well so far. People seem to like it.
And indeed, when it comes up in my stream, I try to retweet yours because I think what you're doing is really cool.
Oh, thank you. I try to retweet your podcast as well.
Which is really awesome. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome.
So how did you become a Kate Bush fan?
Let's see. I think there was
what's your story with her?
I think it was probably late 2015, early 2016. I read this blog post by a blogger called Jack Graham called Waking the Witch at eruditorumpress.com. Just this very general look at Kate, but it was like a very nice read, but it was basically my introduction to her. And so I decided to look into the music. I think first thing I heard was probably Running Up That Hill, since it was the first thing discussed in that blog. And then after that, I sought out what was on Amazon Prime, which is not a lot of Kate was on Amazon mm-hmm. Prime. But I checked out what they did have, the full album they did have, which was The Sensual World, which immediately hooked me. And it's a Walk Straight Down the Middle. I think that's the last track on the American release. Yeah, I think that mm-hmm. was what immediately hooked me was, you know, which that little trill she does there, like
oh yeah,
yes, something like that. But yeah, that was just immediately got my attention, and I've been standing ever since.
I'm assuming you seem like you're a younger Kate fan too.
Yep, 19 years old.
Wow, I was not much older than that when I first started getting into her music in like 2005-ish. So I was like 20, something like that.
That's kind of the best age to get into Kate, where you're sort of in the same place she was when she started releasing music.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you're also like at that age where you're starting to kind of understand like the more of the complexities of life. And
yeah,
I mean, she goes through some pretty complex stuff.
Yes. I mean, who else is going to write a song about nuclear war from the point of view of a fetus?
And actually be the fetus in the video for the song. Like, oh my God.
Only Kate, although I'd argue that that's the video that invented Bjork.
It is, yeah, it is very Bjorkish. Either that or when she's dressed as a swan for Delius.
Oh, yes, that's it. That invented Bjork.
It's funny because when I talk to people about the podcast, like, I'll go, oh, you know, I'm running this podcast about Kate Bush. And of course, I mean, as you know, a lot of Americans don't know who she is. But then I'll go, do you know Peter Gabriel? And oh, yeah, I know Peter Gabriel. Okay, she sang with him on some of his songs, and also before Bjork dressed as a swan, Kate Bush dressed as a swan, and they're like, oh, okay. Like, they're kind of like, okay, we're just going to humor
her.
But it's true.
Yeah, that's generally the response that Kate fans get. We're not treated like normal people.
No. But that's okay. What is normal, really? I mean,
yes, it's a fake standard.
Indeed. So, when I put out the call for fans to talk about later songs, you had said you wanted to talk about Violin. So, what about Violin is one of your favorites?
Well, am I allowed to say that it's batshit? Because, I mean,
yes,
it is.
Can. Okay. Yeah, I think I said damn and shit in a couple other episodes.
So okay. Well, I think it is. It's a rather batshit song. Yeah, it doesn't sound quite like anything else in her discography. Like I've said before, I mean, someone once asked me what my favorite Kate video was, and I don't think my answer was 100% sincere, but I said it was from the Christmas special, the violin performance, which when she's getting attacked by the anthropomorphic violins.
She's so literal. Oh, my God.
It's always so blunt and on the nose, but you gotta love it, because you just so fully commit to these, absolutely taking these ridiculous concepts 100% seriously. Yeah, I think I think it's kind of interesting, because it was, like, it came out right after, she wrote it right after leaving school, and she'd done violin lessons, and by all accounts, hated it.
But something about it must have stuck with her for her to take the time to write a song about somebody who just loves the violin.
I kind of read it as someone who's kind of gone insane just going over the violin ad nauseum, because like it's a song, I think it's a song really fraught with anxiety to the point where like she's like obsessed, like memorized every single inch of the instrument.
But what's funny is that I kind of think of this as a wilder version of the saxophone song.
Yeah, it is kind of that.
Because it is a song about an instrument and the like the feelings it evokes, but it's totally, like you said, batshit crazy.
Yes. Yeah, she kind of anthropomorphizes both instruments, whereas like she's some, like say the saxophone is more kind of benevolent to her, like she's described it as being like a woman, while the violin is just a screeching banshee to her.
Really, if you don't play it right, it can sound like a screeching banshee. As my husband can attest, who took violin lessons for years.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he still has his violin, and he'll break it out sometimes, but he's just like, no, you have to play it right.
There's a difference between listening to someone learn piano and listening to someone learn violin, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a reason my parents wanted me to learn a band instrument, like the clarinet or something like that. My mom said, no, I am not going to listen to you try to learn the violin like every other kid in the orchestra. I think it's interesting that this was kind of written originally. Yeah, I mean, she wrote it when she was a teenager, and it's one of the few, if not only, old songs that she pulled out for Never Forever.
Yeah, it was the last one. It was the last song from the Phoenix demos in this case that she recorded professionally.
And the original, like the demo version, is so much calmer. I mean, it's still kind of. Has like these weird chord changes, but it's just like, yeah, get the vocal going, and it's green to me. It's just so much calmer.
It's like vocally, you can tell she's trying to do some of the stuff that she'll try out later, but not quite getting there.
Four strings across the bridge, ready to carry over the quavers, under the bars, out of the room of the orchestra, out of the room of the orchestra, filling me up with the shivers, filling me up with the shivers, filling me up with the shivers. Get the ball going, let it scream to me, violin, violin, violin.
Like the vocal, I mean, this is one of the craziest vocals she ever pulls off on record, because she's seriously just swooping up and down.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I think that she even, at least in the live version that was on the Hammersmith Odeon, that she hits one of her highest recorded notes.
Oh, yeah, I can believe that. Like, I was just listening to some live versions earlier, and like I think there's the Bristol recording, which I can send to anyone who's interested. But like, I think at the end she kind of gives out this whoop, which you're not gonna hear on any others. But
I'm doing the face like whoo.
Oh yeah, she's great at gurning. She knows how to make these grotesque faces.
Mm-hmm. She's not afraid to like screw up her face and like.
Yes.
Like demon almost.
Isn't that what she does on the back of the album cover?
Actually, she does, because she's like, I'm sticking out my tongue here. Y'all can't see it, but that's what I'm doing.
I can see it, and I confirm that's what she's doing.
And she's dressed as a bat.
It's not something she would have done before, and it's not something she would have done afterwards. It's a very 1980 thing.
Yeah. As for, like, I remember, like, the first time I ever heard the song, I first heard it on the... a VHS to DVD conversion of Live at the Hammersmith Odeon, and I got it off eBay.
Wow.
And that was like right before, it was a couple months before I went to France, because it was like that 2005, early 2006 is like, that was when I was getting into Kate, and I was like just turned 21 when I was in France and everything. I heard this and went, oh my gosh, this is really cool. Like that, I liked the performance of it with the violins, just like for the Christmas special was kind of crazy, but I went, okay, this is really interesting. Honestly, like to me, it's the closest she ever got to like punk almost.
Yeah, it's sort of the whole song's kind of a retort in that, you know, in that sense. I mean, like, well, but like say it's in the sense it's kind of a retort to her violin lessons, but also, like, say, she was not taken seriously by rock critics at the time because you know she's a woman, her voice was too high, and you know, the rock critics, they wanted these, you know, the guitar driven rock. So she's like, okay, I'll give you a guitar driven rock, but with my highest fucking vocal ever.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when I heard this, I could not wait to get Never Forever. And I was really excited to see it at the Fnac when I got there to France, since that's where I got this album and Lionheart. So like this whole album, like to me, like Lionheart is just, I hear it and I'm back in France.
Yes.
And I mean, this was actually one of my favorites off Never Forever. To me, it embodies what I love about Kate. It's the unusual subject matter. I'm going to write a song about a violin. Because why not? The crazy as hell vocal line. The high note that she hits in it, the violin. If I think I capped that at an E-flat 6. That's above soprano high.
Wow.
G. Yeah. So, like, it's crazy. And, you know, I'm a music nerd, so of course I know this stuff. I think even more than ever, like, she's really using her voice like an instrument. I can see where somebody would think this is irritating because she is just like, wah, 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 woo.
How can you not have fun with that?
Exactly. Like, she's having fun with it. And, like, isn't punk all about just like, yeah, I'm going to do my own thing?
Yeah. Yeah, DIY, that sort of thing. But
mm-hmm. And she certainly wasn't quite, you know, wasn't DIY. But that whole, like, I'm going to do whatever I want to and I don't care what anybody thinks of me. That sounds pretty punk to me.
Yeah, it's like approximately the right era for it. I mean, when everybody else was, you know, starting to transition into post-punk, getting more experimental with, say, like Wire or Susie and the Banshees, but she beat them. Mm-hmm. She beat them to it.
Yeah, basically what it's about, I interpret it as just somebody who's, they're going nuts and they just love the violin.
Yeah.
Love it sound.
Yeah, that's sounds about right. And then that would explain the title.
Actually, no, wait a minute. This song is really about a cello. No, just kidding.
I mean, maybe if you play it backwards, she's singing cello over again.
Yeah. No, she wouldn't get into the backwards stuff till later, though.
Yeah, that's some second side of Hounds of Love, or first?
Actually, before Hounds of Love and Leave It Open.
Oh, that's... We Let the Weirdness
In. Yeah.
Yeah, that's Twin Peaks ripping off Kate Bush. Famously, there's these dream sequences that have the characters' dialogue reversed, but you know, just displayed in subtitles. But yeah, I'm willing to bet that David Lynch ripped off Kate Bush. I mean, everybody's ripped off Kate Bush. Kate Bush created breathing, like literally breathing. She invented the human race.
Indeed. What's interesting is, like, I mean, this one is, like, so different from the other songs on Never Forever because it's so rocky.
Oh, yeah. It's like, especially stands out on the second side of the album because, like, the rest of it's just, you know, not rocky.
The Wedding List is a little bit rocky, but definitely not as much as this. Like, I was listening to this today, like, a couple times before we were talking. It was like, da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na.
Yeah, it's very much, you know, guitar, drum, bass layout with, like, violin. The actual violin in the song is rather minimal.
I mean, it appears a little bit in the background, like when she's, you know, out of the realm of the orchestra and you hear that, out of the realm of the orchestra. No, it is a pretty, like, basic, you get your drums, your bass, your guitar, and then, of course, a violin, because it's a song about violin. You gotta have a violin. Yeah. And then her brother doing something in the background, and that's pretty much it. Like, there's no Fairlight on it. It's pretty standard rock band.
Yeah, that's right before she discovered the Fairlight. Well, around that time. Yeah, it's like, well, it's that album where, like, she starts to use it extensively, but this is, like, the half the album where she's still, you know, very much piano, piano rock. Well, maybe that's unfair to her, but...
I don't know what you would call it.
Yeah, it's, you can't really classify her as anything.
No, because she's just... I'm Kate, I'm doing my thing, and I'm proud of it, and I'm going to own it.
The Kate Bush thing.
Kate Bush is her own freaking genre.
Yes. Like, even with her own, within her own work, there's subgenres that nobody else has. Like, arguably, every single song she's ever recorded is its own subgenre.
I mean, I know a lot of this song, like, what people remember it for is the vocal line and the music. Like, do you have any favorite lyrics?
I think the obvious one is, give me the Banshees for BVs, which is...
Give me the Banshees for BVs. Give me the Banshees for BVs.
Like, but people don't know that's background vocals, BVs. But yeah, that's just, like, I think that's very... You know what? It's kind of a rather Irish song, because, like, it's, say, not just that Banshees lyric, which, like, a preacher in Irish folktales, but the violin player is Kevin Burke, who's a favorite musician of Kate. He was from the Bothy Band, which created a song which, in an 80s broadcast, a BBC One broadcast, she called one of her favorites, which is a Farewell to Erin. But, yeah, so it's, I think... It's very much an Irish song. Like, it's kind of folk punk, I guess. Kate Bush created folk punk.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, honestly, most of her songs, like, just they always touch on folk.
Yeah.
Because of her telling a story and touching on her Irish roots and everything.
Yeah, she grew up with folk music in the form of, say, A.L. Lloyd, Ewan McColl. That's just the kind of records that her family were playing around the house.
Yep. So, you know, speaking of that, like, you know, give me the Banshees for BBs. It's interesting that she includes a reference to Banshees because of way that, like, critics were hounding her, if you will. I just realized the pun I did there for like her vocals, and they're like, oh, she's a shrill little girl. And she puts this in there. Like,
yes.
And of course, the Banshees were probably her own voice.
Yeah, it's kind of demonic. It's kind of demonic as far as Kate songs go. But yeah, Waking the Witch is probably fairly close to that, too.
I love the lyrics of pretty much all the entire song. But for some reason, I really like the Filling Me Up with the Shivers and Quivers.
Yes.
Because it just, because you're filling me up. Woo! Shivers and quivers, filling me up. Woo!
Like, you should make sure that you get the physical sensation of the whole thing.
And it's fun to watch the Hammersmith version where she like physically like jumps up and she's filling me up.
Just hopping in the air, then just dressed like a bat. So like, in this case, literally bat shit. But.
Yeah. Because for me, it's not just that she literally makes her voice go up on up. But for me, what I like about her is that she's great at evoking feelings and sensuality, and this with her literally going up on the up, and just the way she's using her voice is like, yep. Mm-hmm. Well, because with Kay, like, she's one, she's like, I have this crazy concept, and I'm just going to go there, and I'm going to go all in. I'm going to write a song about the violin, and I'm going to make my voice sound like a violin. And I'm going to get dancing violin things around me.
And she did this in concert, too. Like how many shows Tour of Life had, but she did it on all of them.
And what I also find interesting, just in general, is that she performed this and then Egypt on that tour. So she, like, had this all going a couple of years before this was even fully released.
Yeah, she performed it live, about a year before she actually recorded it. Before released it, I should say. But
yeah, more for release, because she started recording Never Forever in
79.
Late 79, and then it was released in September of 1980.
Yeah, this is one of the first four songs she recorded for the album, along with Egypt, Blow Away, and The Wedding List, which kind of slightly more piano-based songs, perhaps, where it seems like in the later stages of production, she was getting more experimental.
And pretty much, the live performance on the Christmas special, I don't think is... Other than the fact that she's wearing different clothes, it's pretty similar.
Yeah, those things that have been, it's on the subject of literalism. I was gonna say that she tends to anthropomorphize objects, especially musical instruments, like the saxophone and the violin, and she's really carrying that to its full maximum potential there with the killer violins.
Yeah, on the Christmas special, she's dressed in the bat wings. Whereas the Tour of Life one, as far as I can tell from the pictures, she's dressed kind of in this tight three-quarter sleeve shirt with this pretty drapey skirt, because that's what she was wearing in Egypt, which was, I think, the previous song. And speaking of, I noticed also in the when I watched it on the Hammersmith tape that there were a couple of lyrical changes.
Yeah, she kind of changes every recording, doesn't she, for that particular song?
And apparently somebody asked her for the actual lyrics, and she basically said that she had forgotten them and that they changed several times while she was touring, and that. They weren't really very good, so I don't really remember. But it was something like, hear the haunting melody, leaving enough for my country, here in a wood in a green valley. It's like, okay, well, I'm glad you changed that.
Yes. I was listening earlier, and I couldn't make out what she was saying in any versions except the studio version, which those are just much better lyrics that she writes in the end, her final draft.
Give me the banishing. songs she mentions a couple of people. You know, she mentions Banshees, of course. But she also mentions, you know, you said you kind of get the impression this is somebody going crazy. And there's Nero.
Oh, yeah. That's some.
You know,
that, not a sane individual.
Yeah, the Roman who fiddled while Rome was burning, just like doing his thing. And, of course, Paganini, the famous violin player. He was the rock star of his day. All the women yep. loved him. He was considered a genius. I don't think he lived that long, but then again, a lot of those people don't. And look at Arthur Rimbaud barely made it to my age, so there you go.
Yeah, I mean, you just like have to wonder like if the 27 Club wouldn't have been around like that long ago. But
it would have been like, yeah, you know, everybody's, I mean, life expectancy wasn't very long anyway.
Yes. Like 20, I mean, you don't really want to think about 27 as middle age, but... But yeah, I do wonder, like, yeah, just how many songs about violins have a character named Johnny in them? Actually, I mean, how many Johnnies are there in on song? But
oh, jigging along with the fiddle, oh Johnny, jigging along yeah. with the fiddle, dee dee. I wonder who Johnny is, or if, unless she just chose it because it sounded cool.
It may be some kind of lingo, but yeah, it may just sound right for the song.
Or like old Nikki.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Lord, she's Paganini up on the chimney, Lord of the dance with Nero and old Nikki, whack that devil into my fiddlestick.
She knows how to meter her lyrics, too. She really knows how to get the right beat to the words.
Mm-hmm. And so I wonder who old Nikki is supposed to be. I've always wondered that.
I'm just wondering if there's any connection between Nick and chimney there, but...
Here she is. She says, this was from the Kate Bush Club newsletter... She says, violin is for all the mad fiddlers, from Paganini to old Nick himself.
Yeah, those seem to be largely commercial taglines that she's putting in that newsletter, you know, just saying, you know, how she'd sell it to her label, all these songs, you know, in one or two sentences.
This is from a Radio 1 interview, October 11th, 1980, and there's a great line in that album. Let me just read the notes on the inside of the album. Give me the Banshees for BBs. Immediately I looked at that and I thought, Susie and the Banshees, Kate Bush, doesn't work. What is that about? And she says, well, unfortunately, great for using such words like this. I mean, for instance, It's the Police has a completely different meaning now because of the group called the Police. And I'm referring to the original Banshees, who are, in fact, sort of, guess they couldn't make it out, from Ireland, who would only cry when death was imminent. And so it's just meant to be a very eerie creature singing the background vocals. Going back to the old Irish roots. I have the Kate Bush Complete.
Oh, I just have the PDF here.
I don't sing a lot of these because I don't have her vocal range, but they are fun to kind of pick out on the piano.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's helped me. I'm actually sitting right next to my keyboard right now. Like, so, like, the most I can do is, like, just, you know, pound out some chords while trying to listen, while just looking over this book, but... It's fun. It's a good resource. See, this one, it's in B, isn't it?
No, it's actually, yeah, it's in the key of B major. But okay. It starts on C sharp, that... Yeah, C sharp to F sharp, C sharp, F sharp. And then for the verse, C sharp, B, E, F sharp. She doesn't have as many, like, weird chords against each other in this song. So the chorus is C-sharp, F-sharp, C-sharp, F-sharp, C-sharp, F-sharp, E, E-flat,
oh
D,
my God.
C-sharp. Yeah, so she's basically going down. It's, Yeah, so she's... Dur, 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 dur. She's doing a, like, chromatic... dissension. Oh, she, and then in the very end, it's the violin, it's goes. And she ends on A, which has nothing to do with B major. It's like, okay, maybe at the end she's gone into that, but.
I love her composition. She just absolutely refuses to be orthodox or conventional in any way.
Yep. And that's part of why I love what I love about her music.
Yeah, just all these chords. Yeah. Are there any key changes in this song or just chords that... Okay.
No, it's just weird chords against each other, like at the very end.
Oh, yeah, it's funny how the low point in the song, like the lowest note in the song, does not come from her vocally, does it? It's like the piano?
It looks like it's a G sharp, because it's on the filling me up with the shivers and quivers, which goes... It shivers and quivers before, you know. Or something like that.
So she goes, just filling me up, and then shivers and quivers right next to each other. So this... That's extremely Kate.
Yeah. Only Kate would go, I am going to write a song about a violin, and I'm going to make my voice sound like a violin.
That's right. She does sort of imitate the subject there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we all know that she's all about being literal.
Yeah, that is, you know, like, this is probably, like, well, the dreaming is the first time that she starts to really make her primary instrument her voice, but that kind of starts here.
Well, I think it's always been there.
Yeah.
But it definitely, on this song, like, it is, I think of all the songs up to this point, is her really using her voice as an instrument.
Yeah, just like really doing things that you just could not get out of an... for things that you can do with the human voice, you can't do with an instrument, yeah.
Yep. And it is amazing that she pushed her voice to such extremes.
You'd like even some of the like early downloads, you can tell she's still really struggling, and then she just the progressive recordings, she just manages to nail it more and more.
I can see why somebody would find the song irritating. Like when I've read reviews of this song from other fans, like, oh my god, this is the most irritating song I've ever heard.
I don't really get that. I don't really get, say, how someone can like Kate Bush and not love this song, because it is just so very. It's very, like, well, I'm going to say it again, very Kate.
Yeah, she never performed this on any other TV show. I mean, it wasn't a single, so of course she wouldn't have performed it.
Can you imagine how it would have gone in a singles market, how it would have fared?
I don't know. I don't know how this would have done.
Probably not great. I think it's very much an album track, something you put on the second half of your album. But
mm-hmm.
No, I don't think it would have survived as a single, but it would have been interesting to...
To think of,
yes.
Yeah. You know what would have been really interesting as a single? The Wedding List.
Oh, yeah, that would have been a...
Whoa.
Oh, God, yeah, that's... You can't get enough of The Wedding List. That's just a great, great song.
So that was one that I didn't really like too much at first, and just over time it's grown on me.
Yeah, I think most of this album I didn't pay enough attention at first, and then just slowly grew fonder of it.
Yeah, that's like a lot of her music took quite a bit of getting used to for me.
But yeah, this has been great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. And where can people find you on Twitter if they agree with what you say, that violin is a cool song?
I am at Ballardian Gorse on Twitter. If you find that a bit hard to spell, then just look up Christopher Kelly and you'll probably find me there.
And also your blog, where can people find your blog?
KateBushSongs.wordpress.com, Dream of Organon, the songs of Kate Bush. Check it out and hope you enjoy it.
Cool. Now, do you have another, I forget if you said, do you have another entry in the works?
I just finished the saxophone song entry, and the next one that I'm going to write is The Man with a Child in His Eyes. And then I'm just going to, then I'm back to the Phoenix demos, because that's the end of that 1975 session, and I just had to figure out what songs, what order I'm going to cover the songs from there.
Well, I look forward to reading more of what you have to say about Kate's songs, and I'll be retweeting your posts and everything.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to the podcast. I'll be sharing the podcasts.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. It was great to talk to you.
Thank you. Great talking to you.
And now to close out the episode, we're going to include some thoughts from a fan of the show named Wayne Henderson. You might remember Wayne Henderson as one of the fans that I spoke with for In Search of Peter Pan. He was one of the three people who said, hey, I want to talk about that song for the show. And he had asked me a while ago whether he could send in a voice memo with his own thoughts on violin. And I said, sure, yeah, we'll add it to the episode and put it in there and everything. So here's what Wayne Henderson had to say about violin.
Hey, Cecily. Wayne Henderson here from the Castle Rock Zone podcast, calling in for your Strange Phenomena podcast. I just want to thank you again for doing this. You are plugging along quite well, making it through the Kate Bush catalog, and this is awesome stuff. Wanted to call in about violin from Never Forever. And although not my favorite album of quote-unquote early Kate Bush songs, it is my favorite sonic production and engineering of a Kate Bush album up until Ariel. Although I also do love the sound of Lionheart and the kick inside. I mean, this whole album, especially violin, has a clear, punchy production. You can really hear all of the instruments. There's excellent dynamic range. And these days, my favorite track on Never Forever is violin. I mean, Strange Phenomena, excellent podcast. You want to talk about a strange phenomena? This song rocks and sounds fantastic when you crank it up. I mean, heck, it even has a pretty tasty guitar solo and a fun bass line as well. I mean, sure, James and the Cold Gun has some rock to it as well, but not quite to the level of violin. I just love playing this song, especially loud. Like I said, it's so good. Kate Bush stretching her voice in all sorts of wild and lovely ways all over the song Violin. And it even taught me about the classic violinist Niccolo Paganini. Who would have thought I would learn about that guy, especially from listening to Kate Bush. But then when you look at it with about 25, 30 years of hindsight, it kind of makes sense. It really does. Kate Bush has introduced us to a lot of things and people that we probably wouldn't have discovered otherwise. And how about the last 20 seconds or so of that track? It's just Kate Bush sending it off into the atmosphere, and then it's time to hit repeat and play it again. Thanks again for including my thoughts on violin, and I can't wait to talk about some of the tracks on The Dreaming coming up in a couple of months.
If you have a favorite Kate Bush song or several songs that you would love to talk about for a future episode, here's where you can contact me. First, you can email me, kbcast@linkmedia.com. That's link with an E. You can find me on Facebook, facebook.com/KateBushPodcast, and also on Twitter. You can find me at StrangeKateCast. Join us for a discussion of the 8th track from Never Forever, which will be coming out next week, and I will get to be talking with Zoe P. all about The Infant Kiss, which is one of her personal favorite Kate Bush songs, and we get into a wonderful discussion of the song. So join us for a discussion of The Infant Kiss next week on the show. Thanks for listening. Or even what this song would have sounded like.
Yeah, Kate's just doing stuff that nobody else would do or allow her to do. Like, say, she clapped with Layla a few times, didn't she? Like, apparently the Dreaming was the closest that EMI ever got to returning an album to the artist.
Yep.
No taste.
I will say, like, the first time I heard that album about the same time, actually, as I was getting into Kate at the same time as Tori Amos.
Oh, yeah.
And I know a lot of people like to compare Kate and Tori. No, they are two very, very different artists. One is like, I am bleeding my heart out on the piano. The other is, I'm going to tell you a story and have funky violins around me. And when I listened to, I was getting into Tori, I listened to her more experimental Boys for Pele, which a lot of people kind of compare to like The Dreaming, because it is like both of them taking the reins on their production, doing their own thing and doing something very uncommercial. And I think in both cases, in for Boys for Pele, that it was almost returned to Tori as well. Oh, because boy. her record company told her, you know, like, no, this is shit. You need to go and redo this. I forget where I was going. But I was getting into them at about the same time. And I actually found The Dreaming not... I mean, I still think it's, like, batshit crazy. But I actually found that a little bit easier to get into than Boys for Pele. But that's just me.
It's, well, and she's a... Well, I haven't really listened to much Tori at all, but it's more of, say, Kate's more of, does more mime, whereas Tori does more memoir. Do you think that sounds fair?
I think so, because Tori is much more like, I'm going to, like, tell you about this very personal thing, and it might really, really piss you off, but I'm going to do it anyway. Whereas Kate doesn't really, you don't really get to know her too much as a person. She doesn't speak as much from personal experience as Tori does.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.